officially call us to order at 5:33. First on the agenda is approval of this evening's board agenda. Do I have a motion?
Move to approve.
Thank you, Carla. I have a
second.
Oh, Christy, I have a first and a second. Any discussion?
Nope.
I'm just going to go for the roll call vote then, if that's okay. Carla?
Yep.
Christy?
Yes.
Dixie?
Yes.
And Lily?
Yes.
Motion carries with four roll call votes. Next is public comment.
No comment, El Centro.
No comment, San Bernardino.
Right, we're going to move on then. No comment. Well, we are at the part, I think, that we've started a couple meetings ago, the most exciting part. Anyway, it's an opportunity for us to really delve into some things that are happening at Ballington. Shannon started it off with one of her teachers showing us, I want to say it was a mystery and we had to solve, and then that allowed us out of the what are those rooms called?
Escape room.
It was an escape room.
Escape room. So that started off, and then Mr. Anderson's teacher helped teach us how, I think it was, how to keep an egg safe as it crashed into a wall. So we had some pretty good prior presentations. So we're back to Ms. Shannon in San Bernardino. I'm going to just turn it over to you, Ms. Shannon. You graciously volunteered again to lead us off.
Well, we were pretty excited. Unfortunately, no one was able to be here live because of the hour. But we created a video to demonstrate our robotics program. And a few years back, we won a grant called Kids Code that allowed us to buy a coding curriculum, and the staff chose this particular one that looks on robotics. And there's multiple levels. The one you're going to see today is called Ozobotly. And I think that's all I'm going to say. I would like the video to speak for itself, but it is narrated and the class is taught by Miss Kirsty Hameliers, who is also our music teacher. Her credential is in music, but she has a gift for technology and understanding these things and then sharing it with the students. So, Joseph, if you would be so kind. I promise it's coming. It's a video with narration.
Live by technology, die by technology, I always say.
It's a while to speed up, huh?
Or to ramp up.
All students are introduced to coding using markers on paper. The markers are used for color codes, which give the robots instructions. The instructions can specify speed, from snail pace to nitro boost, timing, or special moves, like zigzag or tornado. The color codes and robot actions become progressively harder. Following the instructions very precisely is essential to achieving the desired outcome. Color coding skills and types of color codes are combined to achieve progressively complicated robotics goals.
Giving robots instructions.
The codes are three or four color sequences and can be symmetrical, the same outcome regardless of the direction they are read, or asymmetrical, a different outcome depending on which direction they are read.
Cool.
Robot tracks and color codes can also be designed and drawn in a freehanding manner. Here are some examples of tracks and code combinations some fifth grade students designed. Students wrote a sentence where the robot performed actions.
another story from a different student.
They then found the color codes that would be able to perform those actions.
Nice job.
Lastly, the students drew a track connecting the color codes in the correct order to bring the sentence they wrote for the robot to life. Students in grades 2 through 5 are learning block coding with the coding platform included in the curriculum.
Do it again.
The color coding skills are now used in a digital environment. Students stack blocks of instructions to create new assignments for the robots. Here we see in action the following. Walking 10 steps, rainbow color lights, pausing for 3 seconds, and 3 times loop of the instruction, say color blue.
I don't know if you could hear it, but it did say blue. I was there. So it's pretty interesting. It's really cool because, you know, the little ones, or older students that are just learning it, they use the markers and they can connect the color of the marker to a particular code. And that tells the robot where to go. But when, now what the older ones are doing is they've graduated to doing it online. So they use the software and they code in the software. And then the robot is connected via Bluetooth. And so the robot does what the code they created tells it to. And, you know, you could see some of them are having the little robot spin around, flash lights, do rainbow colors, speed up, slow down. Today I did an observation and they got to the point where they were racing each other. They were able to code it to make them race. So that's just a little sample of our robotics curriculum, but I'd love to answer any questions you might have.
I just think that's really cool because some kids, you see it online where they advertise coding classes for kids and they charge you for it. So, I mean, that's really neat that they're getting that for free. That's cool. Coding is the thing right now.
Above my pay grade. I do not understand any of it.
I'm not going to pretend to completely understand it, but I can at least follow along with the teachers doing, and the kids completely understand it.
Right. So,
and I think that's what matters. And I found that a lot of those classes you see advertisement for, it really comes down to playing Minecraft all day. And it doesn't kind of build on any skills. And this, you know, has a whole curriculum. And as we go further up, there's actually full-sized robots that walk and talk and things like that.
I think it's so cool that the music teacher is the one who is facilitating this and that's leading that. I mean, you know, talk about multitasking or multi-talented. I think that's wonderful.
Yeah, and she, you know, coding. She does voiceover on the side. So that was her voice you heard.
Oh, wow. She's a pro.
Yeah, she kind of is. So this correlates to science standards in elementary school level, but also there's dedicated technology standards. And so when we chose this curriculum, we made sure it aligned to those standards. And for example, today when I observed the coding class, it was an official observation. So her lesson plan was able to align it to specific California standards. Standards in technology are not part of Common Core. You know, there's the core standards in math, science, social studies, and language arts. So art, technology, music, those aren't part of those core standards, but they do have some standalone standards. And there's a lot of crossover with math and science. So both the ability to code robots and the skill to create those codes align to the technology standards, as well as a few of the science and math standards.
I think that's so wonderful. And the thing about coding is that it really forces a learning of logic and process and steps in achieving something. And so if they're learning those basics now in coding at this level, I think they'll be that much more prepared for more advanced or more sophisticated coding later on.
I think you're so right. I think it would be very, very hard to write standards in critical thinking or analytical thinking, but this is something that definitely addresses it.
I like the way it does it through play too. You know, I mean, that's a very important aspect. You know, your kids, they're learning, they're engaged, but they're also playing. You know, it's like, it's all wrapped within that excitement and that joy and that just, you know, I mean, that's education right there.
And the ones at the very beginning of the video, those were our youngest. Those were TK students.
Wow.
And they didn't draw the lines. They just, you know, they don't have that dexterity to draw those lines. But they did tell the adult that was working with them what colors to put. Like, they told them what to do. And as it got along in the year, the adult would kind of trace a line for them, and then they'd have to go over it in the colors and directions they wanted.
Wonderful. Just wonderful.
Yeah.
We like it.
Yeah, phenomenal. Great.
Yeah, we like it too.
Very exciting.
So is this curriculum for this that's for this year, or like how long does that go? Like, are you then going to get not a new curriculum, but, you know, the next level up, or so they can continue to engage? Is that how that works?
It was a, I don't know the word, like a set package. Like it was a complete curriculum. So it's not like we're going to upgrade at any point or anything like that. But that being said, there's so many videos and online content that as the technology grows, we're able to either log in or go to YouTube and see updated videos that show new ways to use the robotics.
It has a scope and sequence to it already. So there's an alignment from TK all the way through, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's the word I was looking for, Bill. Thank you. Scope and sequence.
Yeah, I see it. I see it just right there with TK and then the older kids and everything.
Yeah.
And that's what you want, because there's a progression of learning as you move on to the next grade. You know,
exactly.
It builds.
Because it builds on each other,
yeah,
it creates that vertical alignment. And learning in general, it's not a straight line. You know, we have to spiral constantly spiral. So when they get that same content, but at a deeper level in the next grade, and then an even deeper level the next grade, it does create that long-term alignment, which leads to lifelong mastery.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And so that's starting getting the theory of learning and things like that.
And then also you're talking about age and stage appropriateness, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, it's targeted to the age and the stage, and that adds to the engagement as well, because it becomes more challenging as you go on in the age. Yeah.
And we were just so excited to be able to introduce this again this year. These are materials that we are not able to send home because they're delicate and they're very, very expensive. There's no way we could have done this without a grant. So we couldn't risk it by sending them home. So we were very excited to be able to pick this up again this school year.
Yeah. And hats off to you, Shannon, because I know that when the request for application came out, there was, as always, a lot of things going on, and you were so committed to completing it and submitting it, and it was awarded. So congratulations.
Well, Doreen taught me well. We never leave money on the table.
We try, right? It really has served as a benefit. I think even just, I know the intent of the grant was really to build that seed and that foundation, and definitely it has taken us through multiple years at this point. I just reflect back on what I was doing in kindergarten and first grade, and I you know, where with my index cards and memorization, and you know, trying to stay up until like 11 o'clock at night memorizing, versus like how what students are doing today. So it definitely is phenomenal. Thank you.
Thank you.
So if there are no other questions, I'm going to transition into the, I guess, not so exciting part of the meeting, the more kind of dry, businessy portion of it. So if it pleases the board, I will move over into the agenda action items. The first one is approval of the March 8, 2022 minutes. Do I have a motion?
I'll move to approve, Dixie.
Dixie, I have a first, and then do I have a second?
I'll second.
Lily, I have a first and I have a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, I'm going to call for the vote. Carla?
Yes.
Christy?
Yes.
Dixie?
Yes.
Lily?
Yes.
Motion passes with four votes in favor. Next on the agenda is another standing agenda item is our approval of our resolution to continue to meet virtually going forward. We are still able to do that. At this point, I'm not sure that might change, albeit, you know, depending on the cases and the governor's response to that. But ultimately, we can still meet remotely, given his latest waiver. So do I have a motion to approve to continue our meetings virtually?
I'll move to approve, Dixie.
Dixie, I have a first, and do I have a second?
Carla, second.
Carla, okay. I have a first and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, I'll go for the vote. Carla?
Yes.
Christy?
Yes.
Dixie?
Yes.
Lily?
Yes.
Motion carries with four roll call votes. Thank you. Next on the agenda is the acceptance of the February financials for both El Centro and San Bernardino. Just board members, again, I feel like I say this over and over and over and over again, just really managing based on, you know, our enrollment and really the COVID impact on our attendance and our ADA, really playing a very close eye to that, to really know where we are at as far as revenue goes. And then just really the other piece of it is managing those expenses very, very tightly. As we kind of went over a month ago at second interim, very, very close to remain positive throughout for both El Centro and San Bernardino. We're also watching very closely cash flow. San Bernardino is with the month of April, we're coming up to being a little bit more tighter going into the month of May. El Centro is still doing okay for as far as cash flow though, but definitely keeping an eye on our ADA as well as our expenses. We still have not heard. I know that there is a bill that is in the assembly or at our state level to see if they would allow us, the charter schools, to remain harmless this year again, to hold us harmless like they did last year, which would keep our ADA constant. We have not heard of anything about that. Knock on wood, we probably will not hear until the end of the year. So again, just being very mindful of our revenues and our expenses And I will, with that, I will ask for an acceptance of the financials for February.
Move to accept it, Dixie.
Dixie, I have a first. Is there a second?
Second, Carla.
Carla, I have a first and a second. Any discussion? Okay. Hearing none, I'll go ahead and I'll call for the roll call vote. Carla?
Yes.
Christy?
Yes.
Dixie?
Yes.
And Lily?
Yes.
Motion carries with the acceptance of the February financials with four roll call votes. Almost forgot about that. Next on the agenda is we do this every year. We need to officially approve the independent auditor selection. I'm recommending the same auditor that we have used. He is again the same auditor that El Centro Elementary School District still uses. I know that Kevin has served, or Mr. Kevin Scroll has served as the primary auditor over the last couple years, or the lead auditor with support from his team. I am not sure, board members, if you wanted to even recommend a different partner at this time. I know it is best practice to change up auditors from time to time, not only, I guess, the firm, and at the same time, the actual lead auditor on this. But I will leave that to your potentially a discussion. I have a first to approve the selection of the independent auditor for 21-22.
So I'll move to approve.
Okay, Dixie, I have a first. Second. Lily will second. Okay, I have a first and I have a second. Any board discussion?
How many years have they done the audit?
They have done the audit since 2009. So quite a while. Since the commencement of Ballington El Centro, actually. We have
supposed to be a rotation.
It is best practice to do a rotation, if not on only of the auditing firms, but actually the lead auditor as a potential as well.
So he was the lead auditor, I think it was 3 years, he said, right? So I think yes. We should be okay.
Yes, Mr. Sproul has been the lead auditor for us for 3 years.
Okay.
Yes.
So do they change the person for us, or do we request it?
You could request it as a board. You could say we're moving forward and selecting your audit for this year. At the same time, we would like to request a different auditor take the lead.
I'm still not quite sure. I think it has to be another company. Can you check into that?
Sure.
Because I think if I remember right, every 7 years you have to rotate to another audit firm. I just want to make sure we're doing it right.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I know that we had the leading, the leading driver of maintaining Wilkerson, Hadley, and King has been that he does El Centro, our authorizer in El Centro. So that since, Mr. Ledoux knows him, we always like to stay consistent, that we're using the same audit firm as the district has used or uses. So that was really our initial driver for his selection and has continued to be the driver.
And I just remember some of our nonprofit down here, we're doing audit. We got to 7 year and then some some other firm did it for 1 year and then we went back to them. So yeah, if you'll just double check that with the auditors and see if they're fine to be used. I mean, I have no problem with them at all. They've done great work over the years.
I would agree with that. I think they do great work. And I think it also, it does bolster confidence with the district with regard to Ballington as well, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's become kind of like a seamless process, even though it's still very stressful.
I can definitely ask, and the district maybe as a school is exempt, like if there is a nonprofit law that has, you know, requires a rotation every so often. I know that the school district has used this auditor for all of this time that they've authorized us. At the same time, maybe as a school district, they're allowed a certain exemption that nonprofits are not allowed to do. So I can check on that. At this point, we have a first, we have a second. If we call for the vote, we cannot vote. I guess.
It's fine to go with them for this. I mean, if we're going to change, let's change it next year then.
That was kind of my thought too, to have that in mind for next year. I think, you know, having the same auditor since, or the same company since 2009 is quite a long time. And regardless of what the requirement, it might just be a sign of due diligence to, you know, to get a different auditor, at least for next year. But I'm assuming this is time sensitive, no, Doreen?
It is somewhat time sensitive, yes. Only because they will begin to do their preliminary work probably in the next month or so.
Yeah, they'll probably start on the internal controls and stuff. So yeah, I mean, I have absolutely no problem using them if it's allowed. So
I think that's the question, if it's allowed, because, you know, Carl, you bring up a good point. If there's something in there about nonprofits in 7 years, then we should see about that. But we do have to make a decision.
So what I can do is I can go ahead and look into that. And if I find that, you know, there is a situation where we cannot, I can notify the board and then we can maybe develop a plan.
That sounds good.
For next steps.
Yeah.
Yeah, sounds good.
So Doreen, were you saying that you think the district has been using them for years and years and years and years too?
Yes, because when we had initially, they had shared, you know, that Ballington needed to be to have an independent audit done. At first, you know, as our Volunteers of America Southwest auditor stated, well, we could move forward and perform the audit as well. As schools, we actually are required to select a auditor from a list that they published at the CDE level, that meets the criteria of being able to audit a school. So we actually had to go to that list. And then at that point, we inquired with El Centro Elementary School District. At the time, that was our only charter school. So that was our only authorizer at that point. So we asked them who they used. And at that point, we thought, hey, just stay consistent. They're familiar with their work. Any reports that we provide to the school district, we have to provide our audit to them. They're familiar with the auditor. They're familiar with all the partners. They're familiar with their team. That would position us probably in a much better light with the school district at the time. So that was how the whole initial selection of this auditor came about. We really needed to select an auditor from this published list that at the state level that are allowed to audit schools. And then at that point, we just went with our authorizer, its auditor.
Yeah, but we should be fine to, we have a meeting in about 14 days, right? Mm-hmm. Is that enough time to find out?
Oh, yeah.
We can vote, vote on that finally.
Yes. So I will go ahead and look in to determine if we need to select an alternate auditor. We have a first and a second. Should we table? Should we vote? What is the board's feeling on that?
I think we need to table it to next meeting.
Yeah, that's fine. If you're get more information, then yeah. And there is a list of that we can choose from, right?
Correct.
I don't want to get in a position where we're trying to reach out to a company and, you know, they have to get things together and there's just not enough time, you know. We don't want that.
I hope I'm wrong because that's a lot of work to get a new auditor.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that this company, you know, they have no forewarning that we're going to switch. So, you know, I don't know what we're going to do, but, you know.
I mean, if it's in the standards, they would know as auditors already. So.
Yeah. I believe he would have alerted me. Kevin would have said, heads up, Doreen, we need to go off.
Yeah. But
since they didn't do that, so let's hope we still can continue with them.
Yeah.
I will confirm. I will get the information. Should we, since we have a motion on the table to approve, we would need to amend our motion to table this.
Motion to table.
Okay. Do I have I have a first. Do I have a second?
Second, Carla.
Carla, okay. Okay, so I have a first, I have a second. I'm going to call for the roll call vote now. Carla?
Yes.
Christy?
Yes.
Dixie?
Yes.
And Lily?
Yes.
Okay, motion passes to table this agenda item to the April 19th board meeting, pending information as it relates to do we need to rotate firms. The next agenda item is the approval of the annual safety plan. Board members, we bring this to you every year. This is one of those annual things that we must review our safety plan. Our safety plan is in compliance with the California Department of Education standardized template for schools to use. It's on file. If you would like to see the full version of our safety plan, it's on file at both schools, or I can even send it to you. It's about 50 to 60 pages long. It just really talks about, and I have listed some of the key items that it includes. Our building plans are individuals that are responsible for, you know, our disasters. We also have our emergency numbers in that plan. That is usually what the one thing that is updated, that of course in staff responsible from year to year for each task, as well as it also includes our suspension and expulsion policies that have already been provided in our charter and approved through our charters. As well as I would say just, you know, those typical disaster response type of situations. We've also added a section to update once again since the pandemic hit and all of our safety precautions around that. For the most part, the only changes this year were, again, updating staff names and updating phone numbers. Everything else really stayed the same. And I know Mr. Anderson and Ms. Brander reviewed it as well most recently. With that, I would ask for a motion to approve our annual safety plan.
A motion to approve, Dixie.
Dixie, I have a first. Is there a second?
Second, Christy.
Christy? Okay, I have a first and I have a second. I'm going to go for the roll. Oops, any discussion?
No.
No. Okay, I'm going to go for the roll call vote. Carla?
Yes.
Christy?
Yes.
Dixie?
Yes.
And Lily?
Yes.
Motion carries with four roll call votes. Okay. The next is just really information items for you board members, and I have provided in your packet quite a lot of information, I feel like, very lengthy. The first piece was about it related to our state testing. That is back on track, it appears, with the California Department of Education. Due to the pandemic, I believe they have given us they've relaxed over the last couple years, understanding that the pandemic impacted all of the students and student learning. This year, I think they're really moving towards getting it back on track, as well as really tying us to accountability. This is just a letter that shares that they have, with each test, we are required to have a certain percentage of students participating. In the past, it has always been 95%. In the past, we didn't necessarily get penalized going forward if we do not have 95% participating in the statewide test, which is the third grade to fifth in Ballington San Bernardino and third grade to sixth in Ballington El Centro. We will get penalized, and they go through a very complicated equation that I did not provide to you in this document. If you are interested, I will definitely send that to you, but they apply percentages and differences in scores, and then they ultimately come up with, if you fall below the 95%, how it will impact your overall standard scores.
If I can jump in, Doreen, the upshot of it is, for every, and this is very general, for every child that doesn't participate, if the participation rate is below the 95%, they assign them the lowest possible score, which brings down the whole school's score. So that's a very high level explanation of what the penalty is.
And it's significant.
Under what circumstance would someone not participate? Would it just be because of their absence, or?
They're absent. The biggest one is parent request.
Parents sometimes don't want their child to be tested.
So, and again, this is my opinion. Last year, before they canceled it, there was a huge, huge number of parent requests to withhold from testing, because testing from home was very controversial. And my opinion, this is not official, is that this penalty is to combat that huge request for parents. But it puts schools in a really tough spot, because if a parent requests that their student not take a test, we are legally obligated to honor that request. So I this particular penalty and policy is very frustrating to me.
Mm-hmm. So I can see how the testing is good for the school. I would think it would be good for the individual students too, to know where they are. Is the parents just object to it because it was at home?
I think that was a big objection last year. I know, again, my opinion, I withdrew my children from testing last year because of the camera issue. I didn't want the state, I didn't want the state staring at my kids. And that was one of the things that was happening last year with at-home testing. But I also know that there's many families that object to standardized testing as a whole. There's some philosophical considerations regarding standardized testing, and some, there's a belief that states that it's not a true reflection of what students know. It's nothing but a snapshot. And some people accuse it of being classist and racist. And, you know, there's a lot of philosophies flying around and a lot of reasons why parents might withdraw from the test.
Understood. Thank you.
I didn't even know you could withdraw from the test. Honestly, exactly. my kids have always taken them. It was like, they didn't really, well, so they don't tell you that though at school. They just say, oh, the testing. And my son's like, oh my God, we have testing. He gets all freaked out, but I told him, you know, that testing doesn't make you pass or not pass your grade. And I think that's a tough thing because kids go home and they're like, if I don't pass this test and I won't go on the next grade, and my teacher's telling me I have to do good. And it's tough, I think, on students. I told him, look at it like, not like a test, but just like, you know, a paper, like, of just like homework, you know, don't treat it like it's so scary. It's just really hard. I think if the state really wants to make this something that people are always going to buy into, it shouldn't be like this feeling of make or break testing, you know? So, but I mean, now that I know that, not that I don't want to do the test, but I think, you know, that's tough. And then they base your apportionments and stuff on that.
So,
that's like, I don't know, man. I didn't even know they were really doing that with your, because at the college level, I mean, we have student success, but it's not, we don't even do assessment tests anymore at the college, you know? So it's like, seems weird.
Yeah, there definitely is a, I want to say a focus on the standardized test and the importance of them, right? And how well you do really drives to what the state's, you know, accountability measures are. They're calling it the dashboard. As charter,
if they would get rid of, so the state, it's an assembly bill where they're getting rid of that, like at the college level. It's just weird that they would, you know, Department of Education would do this when the chancellor's office is going, you know, with a different route. You know what I mean? Like, maybe they're going to catch up with it. I don't know, but.
We hope so. Right? You know,
doesn't that seem weird? Like,
I know that Bill and I and Doreen have been in education for a pretty long time. And I don't think there has been one time where the CDE has done something and we said, oh, that makes sense.
Well, I can give you.
You say that about some of the stuff Chancellor's office does too. But I mean, there's a lot of us that, you know, some departments are having trouble with the lack of assessments because they feel like it doesn't really allow the student the opportunity to find out where they are, so that when they're taking classes, they're going to be successful. So they're like, oh, this is going to really, you know, make it so hard. The students aren't going to be successful, you know, later. So same with this type of standardized testing, it kind of informs an instructor where the teacher, where they might be in that class. They use it for that too. But unfortunately, and just from my own experience, man, standardized testing is tough. It's not really a 100% way to rate a student for every student. It might work for some, but I don't think it's an across the board thing. I think that as schools, we have to really think about this differently. And that the fact that they're basing their apportionments, you guys, on, and if the parents can withdraw, how is that even, like, that should be okay. Well, you know, here's the group that the parents said, no, that shouldn't count against us. You know what I'm saying? Like, analyze the data appropriately, right? Okay.
Preaching to the choir, my friend.
Yep.
Preaching to the choir.
Oh, yeah.
I'll give you an anecdote from my own kid. You know, he bombed these things on purpose. All right. Seventh, eighth grade, all his friends, you'd think they were the dumbest people in the world, you know. But then when it came down to SATs and back in the day, you know, and all of a sudden it's like, where'd you get these brains from? Mm-hmm. And I was like, what about prior? And he said, oh, no kid takes that seriously. Yeah. You know, so there's a cadre of students that really, you know, how do you motivate when they sit there and say, it's just a dumb test, I don't care.
When, you know, my own child was in a traditional public school, he took the standardized test and missed the gifted program by 2 percentage points. And then the following year when they gave, we moved him to a charter, he was reading in third grade, he was reading at a college freshman level and right. comprehending and vocabulary and things like that. He yes. just couldn't finish the test in time.
Right.
So we could talk for days and days and days.
It is what it is. Yeah. It is what it is. Okay.
Yeah. And something like this, you know, when you watch them write these legislature stuff, it's like somebody's doing this. And that, I'm almost like, God, who do we talk to straighten some of this stuff out? There's got to be people. We can't be the only ones who think this is silly.
No, we're not. But the idea is one of a measure of success. You know, we all know that there are many different components of a successful school.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the bottom line. But, you know, when the government gives money, they're looking for some kind of quote unquote quantitative data, you know, yeah. and this is where they've chosen to go, as opposed to other forms of qualitative or other indicators of success in a school, you know, because it's the hard number, it's the data, it's the whole bit. So, you know, I you know, 95%. Okay, we'll do it.
And unfortunately, charters, you know, I feel get, mm-hmm. you know, a much tougher, you know, this oftentimes all of these scores and all of these accountability measures are now driving whether, you know, one year renewed for your charter and for how many years you're renewed. So, you know, unlike school district charters, have a little bit of a harder threshold to jump through, and, which has always been the case.
And in addition to that, charters have such a smaller environment across mm-hmm. the board. So just a very small handful of students could impact this requirement, while at a district, it might be hundreds yes. of students would impact this requirement.
Right. Interesting.
So this is what gives the schools their letter grade, or? What else goes into the schools getting their letter grade?
So it, there's a combination. The state testing is a significant factor. In addition to that is suspension rates. There's expulsion rates that tie into that.
Then truancy rates, truancy
rates. There's what they are calling local indicators, which is all about school climate, school satisfaction, instructional materials. But primarily the large one is the school state testing that on ELA and mathematics.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So that was more just informational item. The next on the agenda in line with legislature. As we know, the governor's budget this year put out several, I want to say, one-time funding, two of which are the expanded learning opportunities, and that's to add additional school days to the school year, which we're working very diligently on trying to complete that plan, and then also the universal transitional kindergarten. Another funding focus was on universal meals. In next year, beginning in school year 2022-23, California will be the first school to implement a universal meals program. And what that means is all of our students will no longer have to pay for lunch or breakfast. Currently, based on, you know, different measures such as your income, if you're participating in certain programs, you can be eligible to receive either free meals or reduced price. And then there's a group that also have to pay. We call them paid price for lunches. But effective next year, all students will now be considered able to eat lunch and breakfast free. Given that, he passed another assembly bill and allocated some funding in that bill. And that was actually just to be able to ramp up for the schools to be able to ramp up, to be able to provide free meals to all students. So he's allocated a small grant and it again, each school based on their ADA is allocated funding. Ballington Academy with this grant, we participate in the National School Lunch Program, and under our National School Lunch Program, we're seen as one agency. We're the Community Education Development Corp, our nonprofit, and within our nonprofit, we have two schools. So our award has been a total for equipment of $37,721 and for training, $2,984. So just a little bit over $41,000 from this grant. They're pretty specific on how it can be spent, and they're giving us to June 2023. Primarily, they're saying training, to train your staff on you know, how to implement nutritious meals, how to be in compliance with our National School Lunch Program. In addition to that, also equipment such as cooking equipment, refrigeration, service equipment, I want to say even kitchen materials on that. So we just received word on this. We'll probably have an opportunity to talk a little bit more in the upcoming months about really what we're going to use the funding for. Any questions on that? Again, one-time funding. It is not included in either of the Ballington's budgets as of now. Okay. Another legislation that also changed this year was the Williams Act. And the Williams Act has a really long history. And ultimately, the 10,000 foot level of it was it was a lawsuit, and the gist of it is that schools need to make sure that all students have equal access to instructional materials, decent school facilities, and qualified teachers. Up until recently, charter schools were not really included in this legislation. However, most recently that's changed, and we are now part of being what they're calling identified for Williams monitoring. And there's two ways that we can be triggered for this. And that's if we received Every Student Succeeds Act assistance grant. And that is when, again, based on state test scores, if your scores come in beneath a certain criteria, they identify you for additional funding. And that additional funding is one way to be triggered for Williams monitoring. And then it's also if a certain percentage of your teachers do not have what they're calling a clear or preliminary teaching credential. This is where, again, as a charter school with a small number of teachers or faculty, you can quickly very easily hit that 15%. I also, as a side, a lot of board members, you have seen that we've struggled with teaching credentials in the industry over the last couple of years. And the California Department of Education has set up PIPs, or provisional intern permits, or STIPs, or short-term permits, as they call them, which are completely in compliance for staff to use and still be able to teach. I believe at some of our board meetings, you also had to approve the use of those for certain teachers. And it primarily, we see it in our enhancements, right? Because those are credentials are so tough when our arts, our musics, our science teaching staff. Unfortunately, if your teacher was using a STIP or a PIP and did not have a clear preliminary teaching credential, albeit they were in compliance, they it still triggered on the Williams monitoring criteria. So with that said, Ballington Academy San Bernardino, I believe, Shannon, we had, I think, one teacher on a STIP or PIP at the time.
I believe we had two, because it also includes intern credentials.
So we had two teachers on an intern credential or a STIP or a PIP at the time, and that triggered us to, yes, to hit the 15 percent. Ultimately, Ballington had 15.3%. And that requires us to now be tracked for Williams monitoring. I understand that this Williams monitoring is assigned to our authorizer. So our authorizer actually has identified district personnel that's responsible. Shannon has already gotten her first visit. They've already walked through the facility. They have identified a list of items that we did need to correct. A lot of it was stained ceiling tiles. I think some of the molding on some of our cabinets was wearing off and coming up. They requested us to cut some trees, trim some of our trees, items like that. And then I understand that other team members will also be coming out across this, I want to say this timeline of Williams monitoring. Any questions on that? Again, very new to charters. Charters were not part of Williams in the past. It is to ensure that students are receiving their instructional materials, decent school facilities, and qualified teachers.
And if I may, if I can add to that, the district is there for support. He made it very clear that he is not the regulatory agency that's looking at it. So he's there for support and to get us ready for the county visit. The county is the one that's the regulatory agency. And just maybe 15 minutes ago, I got an email from the county. They are having Zoom sessions to help us understand what's involved with Williams monitoring, what to expect. And they're having ones dedicated to charters. So hopefully we'll get some clarification on it as well.
Any questions? Okay, so I believe with those three agenda items, that wraps up really our state legislative updates. Or the ones that are really impacting us now. I'll transition really to just very, very quick announcements. Fiscal training. I know after our Brown Act and conflict of interest trainings, there was a request to do fiscal training specifically as it relates to charter schools. So based on that topic, I was really working on, I want to get somebody that one has a really solid depth of knowledge on this. And also it can tend to be dry. So I'm trying to find the person that can actually have the depth of knowledge and also present it well so that it's interesting. I've identified that individual, and I'm trying to really secure a date. I have proposed to him that our next board meeting is April 19th. If he could at that point present an hour long, just, fiscal charter school 101 training, that if that could work, that's what I'm hopeful. I've known this person for many years, and he actually, Miles Dennison, if he can do it for us, has been in the field of education as well as charter schools for many, many years. And he was actually the first person, when I knew nothing about charters, nothing about school finance, I attended one of his seminars, and it was he just made it very clear. He's very to the point, succinct, understandable, and took what could be a very dry topic and made it entertaining. So I'm hopeful that we can get him. If not April 19, board members, I will reach out to you with if some additional dates that he could potentially do. So that was just an update that I've been working on that. I'm going to turn it over to Bill. Bill, I know this was a while ago, but we didn't have it on the agenda. If you could just speak briefly to El Centro and their visit. I know El Centro does as part of our charter agreement, try to visit us quarterly. Years ago, it was a lot more tense. I mean, it was definitely, oh my goodness, they're arriving. Is everything perfect? Man the hallways, man the classrooms. They're here, right? You know, we would text one another. They're in the parking lot. They're arriving. They're at the door. They're coming in. I happily, knock on wood, I think it's transitioned to a much more relaxed atmosphere. I don't even think, knock on wood, Mr. Ledoux joins anymore. But Bill, I'll turn it over to you to share how that went.
Yeah, we had a very nice visit. You know, I mean, over the years, we've had opportunities to really develop relationships with the people coming in from, El Centro, as well as ICOE. You know, we've made a lot of bridges out there, and it was just a very nice, meeting where we came down and we talked about, where we were and what we were doing and the different plans we were working on, because we were all overwhelmed by, the ESSER 1, ESSER 2, ESSER 3 plan. We all did the LCAP supplemental plan and the ELO and the ELOP. You know, we were all planned out. So we had nice conversations about how we were all doing just personally with all that. In fact, I had occasion prior to the meeting to actually have jury duty. And here I was with Christy Curry, both of us on our computers doing work and saying, we can't do this. We got too much work to do, But it was just a nice opportunity to share what was going on in school, and they were pleased with what was happening. And, usually we do, classroom visits and things. And I said, well, do you want to visit, walk to some classes? And they were like, oh, no, we're fine. They, they felt very confident what was going on in school. And I knew that they were very busy with all the plans they had to do. So we moved on. But, I appreciate them coming down. And I think, as far as the school and the growth within the community, we've got some good credibility. So I really appreciate, the relationships that we have with them. And, it was just a nice time.
Thank you. Yes, Bill. I remember the days. I remember the days. So that's nice to hear. And, they would go into the classrooms with clipboards. So that's really nice to hear. Thank you. And I'll let you roll into your principal report.
All right. I'm going to go quick. All right. Okay. As always, the area of focus is school improvement. I finished in professional learning community work. School has continued on to what we're working on right now is identifying our essential standards, our ELA essential standards, and deconstructing them. So part and parcel to this is the idea of really being able to focus on the grade level standards that we want our students to master. When we first got into this, of course, a lot of standards, our report card is just through the roof with all these standards. And over time, we've come to the realization that we have to really choose the essential standards, which will then lead to a report card revision. So we'll be moving on the math standards next year at the beginning of the year. We're trying to finish up ELA for this year. And then we'll begin work on revising our report card for ELA and then transition to the mathematics. But it really gives us an opportunity to focus on the important standards. And then there's syncing up with grade level, first to second, second to third. So that's kind of been a lot of the work that we're doing. We've been meeting with the site council lately, reviewing ELAC committee's proposal for the current Fontes and Pinnell. You know, we use A to Z right now with our ELL, and Mr. Reyes is feeling like he wants to tap into the Fontes and Pinnell curriculum using strategies to support ELL learners. And we're going to then transition to also using then the A to Z as a supplemental for parents to be able to work at home with their children as well. So we're hoping that that will also draw parents into a little bit more involvement into helping their children. You know, we're always targeting skill-specific after-school academics in our third through sixth ACEs program. We're working on our third round of our kindergarten through third grade. This is through the ELO grant, shared reading program. We're using the Fontes and Pinnell reading materials. So we've seen some success with that. We've also seen a lot of success with our level literacy intervention program. You know, so we've been moving and cycling children out of that from tier three to tier two. And, you know, so it's been nice to look at the data with that. NESI is continuing with phonics, Compass Learning as well as aligned to the intervention program. And, you know, teachers are doing targeted tutoring as well after school. And, you know, we're continuing to reach out to our parents. As far as the outcome, well, we're looking for increased K-3 reading proficiency as demonstrated in the ELO shared reading program. And we have demonstrated that. So we have the data that demonstrates that these children have made gains. So we're real happy about that. And the level literacy as well, we're seeing gains with that. So it's been nice to see it. You know, again, we're always looking for increased K-6 reading proficiency. And student achievement in the classroom demonstrated on MAP. You know, we have demonstrated growth from, you know, our beginning of the year fall to winter, and we just completed our spring MAP testing. So we'll be looking at that data next week prior to spring break and putting together, you know, that data so that we can share with the teachers when they come back and we have a you know, to develop a plan as we move towards the SBAC testing. You know, as far as resources, we're looking at the Fontes and Pinnell K-5 book club reading materials. You know, we think, you know, that might be something that would help. And, you know, we'll see that where that goes. Another thing that's very positive is I think we've gained 14 children this past month. Yay. You know, so, you know, we all feel the finish line. So we're scurrying along for that, you know. So that's what we're working 14. On. What's that?
14. Wow. That seems like a lot.
14 what?
Did you say gained 14 yeah. students?
No, we're demonstrating growth, you know. It's just good.
Yeah.
No, 14 increased your enrollment. You increased
Yeah. I know. Yeah. We're getting people dropping out of the sky now. You know, we're getting calls, you know, and since we've combined classes too. It's very interesting because, you know, we have, you know, we had a couple of walk-ins today saying, I'd like to enroll my kid in this class, and that class. And we're like, we're capped out. So then like we put them on a waiting list. It gives us that air of, well, we'll put you on a waiting list, you know. but again, you know, we've done a lot of outreach. And I really want to shout out to my front office staff, Miss Cassandra Venezuela and Doris Singh. I cannot speak highly enough. We've gone to the Winter Fair and organizing brochures and organizing, you know, and Ms. Guzman as well with the artwork that we've shown. We went to the, you know, the literacy that ICOE, they had a literacy weekend. And again, we represented there and they worked hard to get everything together for that as well as be present there. And then just recently we were at the Children's Fair, which was a wonderful event. It was like families were out, everybody was happy. There was a sense of normalcy. And we made contact with a lot of parents. So we've got a contact list of maybe 125 families now. So when we come back, you know, we'll be, you know, outreaching to them as well. So, you know, it was a very encouraging, these were very encouraging events, but they would not have taken place, you know, if not for the lion's share of the work that front office did. And then I got to give it to Mr. Jones as well, 3D printing with the kids, keychains, and Miss Guzman at the fair, she had the wonderful art activity going on. And, you know, we had a lot of people at our booth. It was just, it was an exhausting event, but it was wonderful. Yeah. So that's the update. That's where we are.
And I think you're really seeing, I mean, based on the outreach, I think some of that is relating to some people calling you and increasing your students.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and I had somebody, there are a lot of different Facebook pages evidently out there in the Valley. You know, I don't do Facebook or anything like that, but I had somebody in the Valley Plaza Mall that works in the mall come up to me and say, "Hey man, do you do Facebook?" And I'm like, "No, I don't." And he's like, "Oh man, I was on this thing. I forget which it's like some kind of a, you know, everybody voicing things." And he said, "You know, they're saying some real good things about Ballington Academy." You know, I was like, "Really?" So he's showing me all these different postings where the parents were speaking highly of the school. And, you know, so that was good to see.
It's the rants and raves.
Rants and raves. That's it. The rants and raves. You know that, Ms. Garcia.
Yeah. You know. And one of your parents from that school did go on there. Isaac. I don't know Isaac's last name. I think.
Yeah.
His mom went in there and praised you guys.
And he showed that to me. And I was like, "Woo, hey, we're on it."
That's awesome.
That is awesome. You know, so, and we'll be sharing that in the meeting tomorrow with the teachers.
Well, definitely tremendous thank you to your team, Bill. I know over the last, I feel like the last month or probably 6 weeks. I mean, definitely that you had the fair, then you had the children's just last Saturday. So I know really tremendous thank you to your team. I know it a significant amount of outreach has occurred and
a lot of extra hours they put in.
Hard. Those are hard, definitely hard. Hard. And yes. Thank you, Miss Lily, for being there as well. I understand you were pulled into some of that as well. So thank you.
That was nothing. That was fun, actually, getting to really know the teachers. You know, usually I just wave at them. They know who my kid is. Oh, that's Allie's mom. But it was really nice sitting down with them for a couple of hours and really getting to know them.
Yeah. It's great. So thank you for that too.
Thank you.
Very welcome.
Okay, Miss Shannon, you're up.
Actually, a lot of it is the same as Bill. Our area focus, as always, is achievement and engagement. Focusing on those, what Bill said, core standards, I think. We use the phrase power standards. But the same concept, we focus on those. We're also looking at getting ready for state testing, doing the practice tests and the interim tests. We started a new language arts curriculum this year, Houghton Mifflin's Into Reading. And a couple months ago, we finally got the in-depth training we needed. And so the teachers are really all in, and we're pretty excited about it because we're already seeing some pretty great results. And I know that I'm jumping around the report and I apologize. So stop me if you need me to adhere to it a little bit more, but because there's buy-in, you know, there's more consistency across the school now that everybody knows what they're doing. And we saw it in math results. Our fourth grade class went up in language arts 44 points between tests. It stunned me. I didn't even have words. You know, we still have kids that aren't at the proficient level, but the amount of growth is just astronomical. We had a little guy in our third, fourth combo that was identified with a learning disability this year. And he's been going to the interventionist. He's been going to RSP. And he jumped 37 points just by himself between tests. So the growth is just fantastic. And I'm so proud of the teachers and the students. They've just been amazing. The interventionist that is part of the early literacy state block grant, it's working. She has a structured schedule. She's using MAP data. She's using Dibbles data and teacher data to identify who needs what. And she's creating, you know, it's still the same content, those power standards, but she's creating different delivery systems based on what that particular student needs. So sometimes she meets one-on-one and sometimes she meets with up to five at a time. And teachers are using the social emotional curriculum. The younger grades are still using Zoophonics. Second grade is starting to transition. They really have their head around the foundational skills, but K and one are still using Zoophonics, and that is working. Our DIPLS data show that students are getting those foundational skills that they were lacking before. I know that we've heard a lot throughout the entire country about behaviors in schools, and I'm pretty excited to say we have not seen them. And I don't know if I should say that out loud, but I'm going to. We just haven't seen them. We're seeing, you know, normal stuff, kids getting in scuffles or kindergartners throwing temper tantrums because they're not getting attention and little things like that. But we are not seeing the explosive or exceptionally disruptive behavior. And I think it has a lot to do with the relationships we cultivate with the students and families, the small environment. But at the same time, we do have those services. We have the interventionist. We have that partnership with South Coast. Our counselor's name is Mr. Lamont, and he comes in once a week, and he does a resiliency and anger management group with the upper grades, and then a social skills group with the lower grades. And then we also have a partnership with Victor Support Services for parents who are requesting one-on-one counseling. We as well had an increase in enrollment, not as big as Bill. We got 10 new ones over the last couple of weeks, and we lost a few, but we're still ahead by about 7. So that, I think that's pretty fantastic. Our biggest need right now, and I'm sure Mr. Anderson is feeling the same way, is staff recruitment. I already found out about one teacher that probably won't be returning, and you know, recruiting teachers right now is really, really tough. So that's probably my biggest area of need right now. And while we don't have the community events that El Centro has, we have jumped in with both feet and are participating in an ad campaign through Instagram and Facebook. We do have a Facebook page and an Instagram page. And so we're trying to show pictures in our ads of different community activities we're having, the robots that I showed you earlier, the art program, you know, all those enrichment things. Earlier this week, it's only Tuesday, last week, we had the city, the school police come at lunchtime and just play with the kids. You know, they brought big giant Connect Fours and big giant Jengas, and they had a great time. So we took pictures of that, and that's on our social media. And we have gotten 2 enrollments from them already. So they've more than paid for themselves already. Again, we are working with the teachers to prepare for state testing. We're also doing a needs assessment for math. Like Bill was mentioning, we're looking at math next year to see what those needs are. That's what our staff meetings are about right now. So we're looking at that, and we have no major parent concerns, no major student discipline concerns. Our special ed kids are getting taken care of. We're in great communication with families, and I really think students are getting the content both that they need and that they're really loving, so they're fully engaged. So we're seeing really good things.
That's wonderful. Great to hear.
It was a rough year, but you know what? Well worth it, because you know, it took until February for a lot of our kids to get school ready and buckle down. But as Shannon's saying, you know, to see the growth, I mean, a lot of it was because they were just out of touch with like in-person learning and you know, the whole social piece. You know, so it's been, it really has been very, very good to see them grow like that.
Okay. All right. Well, that brings us to the board closing comments. We're almost at the end, and I think we did it in an hour and a half. A little bit over an hour, but we haven't met in a month. So, and there was a lot of
upon
the state, right?
Noreen, can we get back to approval of independent auditor?
Oh, sure.
I've been researching. And okay. I found out we good.
Okay.
Rotation of auditors, section 139 of Companies Act 2013. It is actually okay. Where did I do my research? PCAOB, they wanted, you know, total rotation. And that was denied by the House. But then the PCAOB said at least have a rotation of partner every 5 years. So I think we're going to be okay.
Okay. Okay, board members, do you want to go back to that and rescind tabling and take action this evening?
Yeah, I think we can do that.
Okay. And I'm trying to think about Robert rules of order and
process. Right. Like, how are we going to rescind and take it
right,
back?
Right. Okay. Rescind the rescinding?
Yes.
So wait till the next meeting and then we'll just take action. But do you still want to rotate out in the future? Like, even if we do approve this for this year, I mean, are we still looking at for, you know, whatever the reason is you want?
I think he has been partner 3 years, and then it's going to be the fourth, and he can do, I mean, he can basically do two more years, and then we will see, maybe one of his seniors will become partner by that time, and he can take over, or she can take over. So, but for this year's audit, we should be fine.
With keeping Mr. Sproul as the lead auditor. Okay, so it sounds like we're gonna bring it back on April 19 and do the official vote. Or rescind and then take another action.
Yeah, but still maybe double check with him and see if that is the case. I was just trying to find something while we were talking here and see if I could find something. And I did.
Thank you, Miss Carla.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's good to know at least, right?
Yeah.
Sure. Every five. Oh my goodness. At least we can change the partners. I guess they recognize the significant amount of work, I guess it would be for the nonprofits to keep changing audit firms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Any additional closing comments? Okay.
Not for me.
None. I will officially close this to the public at 6:56.
Thank you, Ms. Doreen.
Thank you, everyone. And hopefully next meeting will be short. Hopefully it will just be the primary, the audit approval, our general agenda items, and then training. Hopefully that can be worked out.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you, Doreen. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. All
right. Thank you, guys.
Bye, everyone. Have a good night.
Have a good night.
You too. Bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you, Carla, for your help.
Yep.